About to hear just a few of the many thousands of voices in the Freedom Archives.
The Freedom Archives is an audio collection of thousands of hours of recorded sound broadcast from the late 1960s to the mid-1990s.
Today, it's no secret that we live in perilous times for democracy and freedom.
The voices in the Freedom Archives reflect the aspirations of all those who treasure justice and peace.
All those who know that freedom is a constant struggle, who know that without struggle, there can be no progress.
Earlier this summer, Circle A radio journalist Hanna Vierkamp took a field trip to the Freedom Archives, now housed in the Mission District of San Francisco. Claude Marx and Patricia Hemphill were kind enough to take us on a tour. Throughout the tour, you'll be hearing excerpts of a CD produced by the Freedom Archives in 2002 entitled The Roots of Resistance, Selected Highlights from the Freedom Archives, Volume 1. The CD was produced by Lincoln Bergman, Barbara Lubinsky, and Claude Marx, with technical assistance from Mike Quinn in the joint production facilities of the Prison Radio Project and the Freedom Archives. The voices and sounds from this CD are a tiny fraction of the wonderful collection housed within the Freedom Archives. There's no way that we can do justice to their entire collection, but we hope we can manage to spark your interest and provide some sense of the spirit that weaves through the Freedom Archives. Stay tuned for Circle A Radio.
My name is Patricia Hemphill. I'm the Youth Program Coordinator here at the Freedom Archives.
And I'm Claude Marx, and I'm the director of the Freedom Archives. The Freedom Archives was really a project that came together because there was a tremendous amount of amazing historical material, both political and cultural, that we felt needed to be repurposed and accessible to people. We thought that putting this collection of materials that a number of different individuals and collectives are responsible for producing and accumulating a lot of this historical material over the years would be good to have it in one location and to figure out some way to repurpose it and create public access to more radical information, interviews, cultural performances, things of that nature, realizing that the material was intact and could find a home. So we ended up finding a location, which is where we are, and moved into it in the beginning of 2000 and started to catalog material and organize it and produce one to three projects a year over the last 8 years, 7 years really.
What are some of those collectives and groups that had the material, and how did you find it all?
Well, there was a number of different community-based collectives back in the 70s and late 60s producing independent radio, also some video work that was happening back then. Some of it was centered at KPFA, and some of it was at radio stations like KPOO, which still exists. It's a community-based radio station in San Francisco. The collectives were Comunicación Aslan, which was one. There was a number of different third world production units that were connected to KPFA at the time from both the black community. There was Native American stuff going on. And there were people like myself who were doing weekly news magazines. And the Pacifica Archives themselves were not that interested in this type of programming because it wasn't mainstream enough and was not fitting into their preconceived notion of what was important historically. So by default, we ended up with all this material in our possession. And it's good that this material found a home. Some people went on to do independent programming in places like Atlanta, other areas of the country. So there's really an interesting collection of material that is very broad-reaching in terms of what issues it deals with. And thanks to our website, you can actually search the material that's cataloged to this point, which is probably two-thirds to three-fourths the material. You can't listen to all of it on the web, but you can certainly see what type of material we possess.
So in a lot of ways, we function as any archive would, as sort of a community resource if you see something that you're interested in. From the website, you can come in and listen to it. We can show you how to transfer it if necessary. And if you're out of state or if you're not able to come by, we can reproduce it for you, send it to you. It's all on a negotiable fee or trade sort of basis that the labor's done around digitizing or making copies of stuff, but it's definitely accessible to people if they're interested in listening to or having copies of most of the material.
The great African-American singer and activist Paul Robeson, in a rare recording taken from a speech to a union gathering in San Francisco, followed by Fannie Lou Hamer of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party leading the singing of Go Tell It on the Mountain and speaking of the civil rights struggle, immediately followed by the voice of Malcolm X speaking of the arrest and beating of Fannie Lou Hamer in Mississippi.
I come from a slave father, not grandfather, a slave father, born in eastern North Carolina in 1843, escaped from slavery in 1858, a contemporary co-fighter with Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, John Brown, Sojourner Truth, and William Lloyd Garrison for the freedom not only of the Negro people, but of millions of white workers caught in the same serfdom as their black brothers and sisters. So our brothers and sisters from Mexico, the Philippines, from the lands of Asia, from the West Indies, from Latin America, have come to these shores to share the same fate. And all through our history, the working masses, colored and white, speaking many languages, representatives of the finest of the old and new world cultures, have had to fight every step of the way for a decent wage, for decent homes, for decent education for their children, for human dignity itself.
I want us all in this building to sing, go tell it on the mountain, to let my people go. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain, to let my people go.
You can pray until you faint, but if you don't get up and try to do something, God is not going to put it in your lap. And there's no need of running and no need of saying, honey, I'm not going to get in the mess. Because if you are born in America with a black face, you are born in the mess.
I listened to Mrs. Hamer, a black woman, could be my mother, my sister, my daughter, describe what they had done to her in Mississippi. I asked myself, how in the world can we ever expect to be respected when we know that we will allow something like that to be done and we do nothing about it?
Can you talk some about the intern and education program?
Sure. It is always changing. There's always an element of having people come in and listen to the materials and catalog the materials. That's how most of the stuff actually ends up on the website, so that you can search it. So we have people listening to the material, digitizing the material, transferring it, and then doing the research that's necessary to put up comprehensive information about what we have in our collection on our website. So that's always an element of it. One way that we're growing and developing is we're really trying to work with younger folks, high school age students. We have relationships with local schools, and we're developing curriculum now with schools around local history and also just engaging with the radical history in the archives.
Well, I thought it'd be good to talk about one of the examples of a project that has been ongoing, We've been working with the Manila Town Heritage Foundation, who are in the community, in the Filipino community, and really represent the history and legacy of the struggle around the International Hotel, the I Hotel here in San Francisco. And what we did with them is that we helped them both with a level of technology, but also locate a lot of the historical recordings that have to do with the International Hotel struggle, and create both a database of that material, but reproduce it so that it existed in a digital form, so that in the last several years they have opened up a community and cultural center in the location of the new International Hotel that is an attempt to create both a community, cultural, and political space for the Filipino community, but also a place where the history of that particular struggle can be accessed. And to us, it really speaks to the kind of intent of creating spaces in the community itself where history can be brought back to life and be available to people and be part of rebuilding a struggle in a very targeted community, in this case, the Filipino community in San Francisco. And we had done, a number of us had done a level of journalism and reporting in the course of that struggle unfolding and the resistance to the expulsion of the tenants of the International Hotel. So we ourselves had some of it, but we also had a familiarity with what else was out in the community. So it was really exciting to be part of this process, and this is a kind of model that would be great to replicate in other parts of San Francisco and other parts of the country, for that matter, ways in which people can be encouraged to connect with history, and particularly the history of resistance.
The struggle to save the International Hotel united low-income and elderly Filipino, Chinese, and many others who lived in the building in San Francisco's North Beach. They fought valiantly, but the hotel was demolished, and the lot remains empty to this day. This excerpt includes sounds of the brutal police assault led by then-Sheriff Richard Hongisto on residents and supporters. You will hear Felix Aysen, one of the tenant leaders, with reporting by Andreas Alegria and Don Foster.
Fight hard with us so that we can maintain the hotel from being demolished. Our unity is our strength.
That's the sound of Richard Hongisto swinging a sledgehammer, breaking in a door here at the tenants of the International Hotel.
The sheriff wields the sledgehammer once again on the locked door. There we go. Knock the door open.
Now they come here and Hongisto make a lot of damages to human body, to human right. We're a peaceful people who lives in that building. And why do you have to do this to us?
No! We won't!
The demonstrators, the people in support of the International Hotel tenants, have moved into a human barricade surrounding the International Hotel as the scene seems to tense up. It appears as though people are understanding that the police department are about to make their move and are militantly shouting their sentiments about what's going to happen tonight. And you can hear that in the background.
They're hitting people. From the other side, these police units that are on horseback are now moving into the crowd and effectively keeping the crowd on the other side from moving. What's happening is that a large portion of the crowd in front of the door, front door of the International Hotel, is being squeezed between officers with clubs on one side and officers on horseback on the other side. Situation is very ugly here at the International Hotel. A large group of supporters massed in front of the front door of the International Hotel are being pushed by force by members of the San Francisco Police Department. They're not moving. The supporters are not moving.
So
So back here we have hours and hours of Paul Robeson singing, interviews, speeches that producers have collected over the years and donated to our archives. And our recent CD, Paul Robeson, Words Like Freedom, was produced using a lot of this material, and it was a team effort of going through and finding stuff and digitizing. We also have the collection that Claude was talking about, Comunicación Aztlán, is located back here, and we have so much material on the Chicano movement. Let's see, there's material from the 70s and all sorts of material from resistance movements throughout Latin America is really in this section. These boxes, Pajaro Latino, is another program that comes a little bit afterwards. I believe it's late 80s, 90s material, also on Latino struggles.
What about these? Are these videos?
Yeah, we don't have as many videos as audio, but it is growing pretty quickly, our video collection, through donations of people that, like Claude said, have just held on to this material and looking now for a place to house it so that it can be used as a resource for people. I would say it looks like 3/4 of our video collection has been watched, but our interns and our volunteers are still looking through, sorting and organizing, but we have videos on prison movement, on struggles in Africa, Judy Berry, definitely a lot of information on women's movements in this country.
So I see there's a shelf that says to be viewed. So what's the process when you get new stuff?
Well, the process now is to try to take a very quick sort through it when we first get it to see if we can kind of bring things together based on common themes. And so that's what's happened now to the To Be Viewed section. Volunteers gone through and sort of grouped things so that people that have particular interests can come through and really sit with a certain movement or a certain person or moment in history and really just have the opportunity to gain knowledge from the videos. And so we ask them to look through it and look for quality, look for content. Sometimes, you know, some things have better content than others, so it's really this dialogue about what will be useful to add to the archives, what will be useful for people to have access to. And because you never know when people are donating things, sometimes, you know, lots of stuff gets thrown in there, but sometimes you find stuff that's amazing. And, you know, when they were working on the Prisons on Fire CD, they happened to find this interview with James Baldwin talking about George Jackson. And, you know, I think it was just a lucky thing that they happened to listen to this and they're like, oh, wow. This is an amazing piece of history that we found, and now we have the opportunity to get it out there so people can hear it.
When we were doing radio, the first portable video equipment became available, which was made by Sony primarily. It was half-inch helical scan reel-to-reel video, and one of the things that we're trying to do in this next period is repair some of the equipment that those kinds of tapes were recorded on. What that technology did is it gave people the possibility of recording in the field without a lot of cumbersome gear and huge crews. So things like the first radical cultural workers conference that happened in California was documented. Things like the founding convention of the Raza Unida Party in the Southwest. And we've yet to be able to get to transferring some of that material off of this original helical scan to something that's a more of a contemporary kind of recording. So that stuff's pretty interesting. And we have been able to do a lot of transfers off of our U-Matic, which is a 3/4-inch cassette format that came right after the Sony Portapak. And we will likely use some of that in our next video, which was from a camera original interview done in San Quentin in 1985 or 6 with Geronimo Pratt, talking about, among other things, COINTELPRO, and he, of course, plays an important role in this next film called COINTELPRO 101, because he did 27 years in prison because of a setup, because the FBI never proffered information that established clearly, without a doubt, that he was not even in Los Angeles when the murder that he was convicted of happened. So things like that become very interesting, and they become very significant as a way to repurpose historical material and actually talk about something like COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program of the FBI, today in this context, in the kind of world that means the Patriot Act and Homeland Security is running roughshod over civil liberties and civil rights. We're planning on releasing a video later on this year, probably show it for the first time at the Critical Resistance Conference happening in September in Oakland. The middle aisle, one side of it, contains a huge amount of prison-related interviews that document from the 70s forward, with a real emphasis on things like the Attica Rebellion, the resistance that is typically associated with the California prisons as well, recordings and interviews with people like George Jackson, Rochelle McGee, and then the aftermath to the murder of George Jackson, the San Quentin Six case, which went on for 4 years, other forms of resistance that are prison-focused. So it's always been a real tremendous focus and centering of our work on the issue of people who would not otherwise be able to have any access to public dialogue.
This excerpt includes recordings of prison revolutionary and author George Jackson and his mother, Georgia Jackson, with a Bay Area newscast on the assassination of Jackson on August 21, 1971, at San Quentin Prison. Also, excerpts from the first statement from Assata Shakur after being liberated from prison.
Saturday, August 21, 1971.
Today at about 3 p.m., there was an attempted break from our adjustment center, which is our maximum security facility. George Jackson was killed as he broke and ran outside the adjustment center.
Well, I could die tomorrow, but there'll be 200 or 300 people to take my place.
This is one black man they're not going to murder and sweep under the rug, unless they murder me too.
Uhuru, sisters and brothers, the first thing I want to say is that I love you. And the second thing I want to say is that we can win. We will win our liberation. And in order to win our liberation, we have got to think positively. We have got to believe that we can win. And if we don't believe that we can win, we're whipped before we start. We've got to realize what dangers exist, and we've got to look at those dangers realistically. We can't afford to have a subjective, distorted, irrational fear. We've got to look at the obstacles to our liberation coolly and clearly, and to develop ways to get rid of those for us to struggle, for us to fight for our liberation and for our nation.
Again, this is Claude Marks of the Freedom Archives.
The other part of the aisle has to do with a news magazine program that was initiated in the late 60s by Lincoln Bergman, and somewhat later by he and myself, that was originally called The Midnight Flash and then became The Real Dragon and then turned into an hour-long magazine when Lincoln went to work with Radio Havana for a period of time. And in the mid-70s, it went through another transformation and included a number of other program producers at that point and was called Freedom is a Constant Struggle. And it wasn't until 1995 that that program was actually forced off the air at KPFA. So what that means is that we have a continuity of news magazine and interviews that span from roughly 1970 through 1995. It also means that the people who were part of producing that whole series for, you know, 25 years are still in touch with one another and in one way or another still have a relationship to the Freedom Archives. And so that has made the collection significant in the sense of a continuity of historical documentation.
What do we got back here?
This is sort of work in progress. This is, material that isn't really cataloged yet, that needs to be gone through, that's been sorted initially, but it's going to require a lot of intense work to go through and figure out what it is. There's cassette tapes, which of course are a more modern form of recording than reel-to-reel, but nonetheless contains a lot of very significant material historically. Some of them are what you call air checks or recordings of programs, and some of them are actually raw material, meaning primary interviews that may have in part become part of programs later on, but unedited. So probably fairly significant stuff contained in the cassettes as well as the reel-to-reel.
Again, this is Patricia Hemphill of the Freedom Archives.
So this is our other production space, and it really contains our newer equipment. We just went through a recent upgrade, specifically because we're working on this new film, COINTELPRO 101. So this is where most of our film editing and transferring happens. As you can see, no one else can see, we have it set up to transfer DVs, and we have the capacity to do a lot of stuff here, but we also do audio transferring and digitizing here in the studio space as well. This is where I spend most of my time. I was in here yesterday working on editing down some of the interviews that we've done for the COINTELPRO film. So this is our main space at the moment. It's also our storage space. If you look up at the top, those are some of our paper archives. We keep some historical documents from past movements and also our project archives. So once we've produced something, just holding on to our paperwork just to document our process in creating. And access equipment, wiring, cables, all of that is located in here as well.
Who does the transferring and the editing? Do volunteers do that too, or are there different producers that work with you?
Yeah, combination of both. I actually, my relationship with the Freedom Archive started when I started as an intern here years ago. And I actually began working on the Robeson CD as an intern here at the Freedom Archives, where I learned audio editing skills and was able to participate in that process. And it was a really good learning experience because I'd always been interested in editing but never had access to anything like that. And we also do work with people that have been producing for years, and it's sort of an intergenerational process that we do that, where the skills are shared. And we're able to communicate about what the work is going to look like, what it's going to be, and that's really how we create all of our projects.
Up next, you'll hear a montage of Paul Robeson, produced by the Freedom Archives in 2008 in a compilation disc entitled Words Like Freedom.
Extremely militant and demand a little more than they are demanding today, and to do other things as well as pray, let me put it, as well as pray.
My people died to build this country, and I'm going to stay here and have a part of it just like you, and no fascist-minded people will drive me from it.
The Negro people know that the only true allies of the Negro people are the working masses of this land, not a few billionaires and corporations who daily bleed both black and white. And it's about time that we woke up. I heard it here tonight. Yes, feel the power we have in this world. That's why you're just so frightened what shall be said by one or two people. You know what? You get so nervous about one or two people say. Because of the power that rests under there of a people who have been oppressed for many generations and say, I want my freedom and I want it now. That's what it's got to do.
This United States government should go to Mississippi and protect my people. That is what it should do.
I invoke the Fifth Amendment and forget it.
I have medals for diction. I can talk plenty loud.
We must know our strength. We happen to be
the decisive force. That's what they're scared of.
If you want freedom, you have to suffer sometimes.
To me, my art is always a weapon.
Hold on, hold on. Keep your hands on the plow. Hold on.
That in my heart I go on singing. I keep laughing instead of crying. I must keep fighting until I'm dying. Old Man River, he just keeps rolling along.
I was also prevented from actually appearing in my own land. Concert halls were denied to me for many years. I was refused theaters. I have never been on American television, for example. That is, I've been blacklisted, as have many of my colleagues in America.
And you're listening to an interview with Claude Marx and Patricia Hemphill of the Freedom Archives here on Circle A Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM, your community radio. Stay tuned for more of our interview and a tour of the facility of the Freedom Archives. This is Claude Marx.
It's very complicated to think about how you maintain a level of political integrity and independence in a period in which the conception has really changed over the last 20, 25 years of political work becoming funded by corporate structure or, in fact, becoming part of a corporate structure. There's a lot of things that have been written about this that critique it as an approach. And we are a nonprofit corporation, but our reliance is not on foundations. It's not on other corporate money primarily. What keeps this functioning are family funds and small donations. And that allows us to get support for projects that are oftentimes more radical, either politically or in their conception, than what most even progressive media funders would like to undertake. So the majority of our attempts to get foundation money are turned down for various reasons. Some of them are explained and others really aren't explained. But when we try to do something like our recent video about grand jury repression and COINTELPRO and torture called Legacy of Torture that focuses on what is now the San Francisco 8 case, we really had an expectation that funding would be difficult for it, but it was an important piece to do anyway. And so it's on the basis of its political significance that we gathered our forces and made the video happen, not because we actually had money to do it, but because there was a compelling political need for it. There was a need for it to come out when it did, and that it meant a potential for the people who were targeted by current government repression to have a voice and an organizing vehicle and a tool to counteract not only the corporate media, but to counteract the prosecution itself. And we think that it's actually succeeded in doing that. Mind you, there was a level of support for the video once it became clear what the purpose of it was, and it's been selling pretty successfully as a result of people wanting to embrace a campaign that defends the San Francisco 8. The success of a piece of independent media is less tied to somebody's agenda than to the need to create a political movement, the need to counteract a sense of domestic terrorism, which is what the government is trying to do. An attempt to criminalize the history of the Black Panther Party, an attempt to legitimize the use of torture in the course of, you know, everything from Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, to the U.S. prison system, where this is not a new question. And that's what that video does, and we're able to do that because we have grassroots support, people who appreciate, respect, and support that kind of work.
This is from the video, Legacy of Torture.
The same people who tried to kill me in 1973 are the same people who are here today, 2005, trying to destroy me. I mean it literally. I'm very concerned. I'm angry. I don't feel like it's right. I don't feel like it's something that should go unnoticed, or I don't feel like the government should be able to get away with continuously to harass.
And we continue being led around the Freedom Archives by Patricia Hemphill.
And this is our administrative space, I guess that's what you'd call it. This is where Claude and I sit and do our work all day. And we also try to create it to be a place where people can come and hang out and read our books. And we also, I think I was talking about in the other room, paper archives. We also have these file cabinets full, and they're labeled. We have information on prison movements, Puerto Rican independence movements, Black Panther Party, SLA, political prisoners, that people can also access if they want to come in and do that sort of research too, and actually be able to see magazines or communiques or things like that, where we have that to a limited degree, but it's definitely here. And we have a great book collection. Sometimes I walk around and I'm like, what? I need to just like spend time and sit here and read and learn. So, I mean, that's really what we try to be about, a space to like gain that knowledge and dig in and engage with that history.
And can people just come by, or do you prefer people to make appointments?
In both ways. Okay. I think people do just come by, and we try to be as accommodating as possible. You know, it helps if you make an appointment just to know that we're here, but we try to be a welcoming space to that. You know, we want to be a resource.
The difficulty is that we're not an institution in the sense of a library, and so people coming by in a more random way risk our being too busy to give them a lot of focused time. And if somebody is interested in doing a level of research, it really goes a lot more smoothly if we know that that's happening and can plan for it. And as a result, people can use their time better, and we'll use our time better. But as Patricia said, the whole purpose of this is to make sure that a certain radical part of history and culture are not erased, that this kind of history, which is already subjugated by not being reflected in most curricula, it does exist. It is here with a purpose. We are about promoting its use, and that we value the use of the materials so that a labor exchange is often a way that contributes not only to our knowledge of what's here by people participating in a cataloging process or figuring out some way to equitably advance both the work of somebody doing targeted research, but also the work of the archive and the ability for this material to become accessible to even more people.
Up next, a collage of news broadcasts from 1954, when Puerto Rican nationalists attack the U.S. Congress. Irvin Flores and Lolita Lebron respond to reporters. Ruth Reynolds, a longtime dedicated supporter of Puerto Rican independence and the Nationalist Party, analyzes the reasons for resistance. Lolita Lebron, speaking in Spanish at a celebration of her release from prison, at an event that took place at the Mission Cultural Center in San Francisco.
This is the chamber of the House of Representatives within a few moments after it was emptied, still showing the aftermath of the wild hail of bullets by fanatic Puerto Rican nationalists. Outside the Capitol, hospital and emergency units quickly mobilized to care for the five wounded congressmen cut down in the fantastic sudden shooting. Even as the stricken five are rushed away to hospitals, observers regard it a miracle that more were not hurt in the crowded chamber by maniacs firing at close range. Under heavy guard are the would-be assassins, Mrs. Lolita Lebron, who boldly claims she's instigator of the murder plot. Seized with her in the visitor's gallery, Andrew Carderos.
Another who brazenly sprayed bullets, an unsuspecting congressman, is Rafael Miranda. A fourth member of their group evaded capture in the House chamber. He's Irving Forres, arrested soon after the attack in a Washington bus terminal.
Mr. Gandhi, do you agree that the way to gain independence for Puerto Rico is to go around shooting American congressmen?
The nationalist movement of Puerto Rico is a movement that for many than 25 years has been demanding in all international congresses and only international bodies the recognition of independence of Puerto Rico.
Did you shoot to kill the persons in the Congress?
Not to kill.
What was the purpose of the shooting?
The purpose of the shooting was in the clamor of freedom for my country.
Well, miss, can you tell us whose idea this was?
It's my idea and our idea, the four of us' idea.
Are you sorry, that you shot these five congressmen?
I'm not sorry of what I did. I'm not sorry.
How about you, Mr. Bronson?
I'm not sorry to come and ask freedom for my country any place.
Luchando por su derecho, hoy el pueblo se levanta, mientras por allá en Kansas hay cinco nacionalistas presos.
But Lolita looked at the moon on hot nights from her tenement roof. Puerto Rico had to be free. It could not bear the disgrace of being a colony. Lolita and her comrades wanted their country free and independent, an old dream of all the patriots and martyrs. And like them, she thought her life was not too great to give for La Causa. They wanted the American people to know that Puerto Ricans want their independence.
Están cinco compañeros presos.
No es fácil pronunciar un discurso cuando tenemos la madre tendida sobre el lecho y en acecho de su vida un asesino. Tal es la situación de presente de nuestra patria, de nuestra madre, Puerto Rico. El asesino es el poder.
Condenado por el mero hecho de defender esta tierra, por amarla, por quererla, hay cinco hermanos presos.
And if you study the acts of violence committed by nationalists, you will find that they have always been within that framework. Resistance against the police who had been ordered to annihilate the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party, to liquidate it, and if necessary, to assassinate its leadership. An attack on the home of President Truman, who had sent Lewis Johnson to Puerto Rico to order the liquidation of the Nationalist Party and the assassination of its leadership. And finally, in 1954, an attack on the United States Congress, which must be considered responsible for whatever happens in Puerto Rico because it has usurped Puerto Rico's control over itself. People who consider it dishonorable not to reply when attacked.
Nosotros los puertorriqueños y todos los oprimidos por el terror y la violencia hemos tenido que acudir y no vacilará Puerto Rico si necesario fuera a este último recurso de las nacionalidades, que es el uso de las armas para realizar su emancipación nacional. El imperio norteamericano se obstina en su ocupación de nuestro país y nos provoca día a día y noche a noche a la defensa de nuestra dignidad nacional. Somos víctimas de su violencia y de su terror. Nosotros hemos tratado todos los medios pacíficos en cuyo proceso el enemigo norteamericano se ha fortalecido.
And for our listeners that are in Portland, are there ways that people can get involved?
Well, people can certainly contribute. I think there's a lot of ways that we can interpret contribute. I mean, of course, there's monetary stuff. But I think if there's interesting materials out there that exist that more chronicle events that are Portland-based or Oregon-based, We certainly are interested in that if there isn't a better place to put it. We certainly want to network with people who may not want to transfer materials to us, but connect as a way of creating a larger network of radical materials. We've certainly been blessed with our relationship with Circle A Radio because you all have been very supportive in putting our material out on the air and also stepping up, you know, more recently, for example, in sponsoring a tour around the San Francisco A case and things of that nature. So the kind of relationship that we have with you and therefore with your audience is something that can continue to build and deepen. So that level of contribution, the sensibility that there are people trying to do similar things in a lot of places, and the relationship of that work to building awareness of, you know, radical politics and culture is very important to us. So it's really a two-way street.
Next up, we'll listen to audio that's from freedomarchives.org from their audio download section. We begin with a clip from Nelson Mandela.
We must not allow fear to stand in our way. I have fought against white domination. And I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
Nelson Mandela, anti-apartheid activist and co-founder and leader of the armed wing of the African National Congress. That was an excerpt from a speech upon his release from prison after 27 years, February 11, 1990. Chris Honey was the most popular leader of the African National Congress after Nelson Mandela, and particularly among the poorest communities. Chris Honey:
I'm very optimistic, and my optimism is not based on what negotiations, on what is happening to negotiations. But my optimism is based on the mood of the people on the ground. Their confidence, their militancy, and their impatience with apartheid. I think our people have decided that we are going to dismantle apartheid. And I think that is what causes optimism. Optimism is based on the fighting militants of the people. I think for me, it's really material what de Klerk does ultimately. The people will have a democratic South Africa. And I think no armed force or whatever can stop this process. I think we've reached a situation in South Africa where we are no longer prepared to live under apartheid. And we are ready to make whatever sacrifice to get that democratic South Africa.
Chris Honey, assassinated in April of 1993, 1 year before South Africa's first multiracial elections, in which the African National Congress won 62% of the votes, and Mandela, as leader of the ANC, became the country's first black president.
Fred Hampton, chairman of Illinois Panther Party.
All power to the people. What we basically going to be talking about today, we're going to be talking about political prisoners, and we're going to be talking about what the pig is doing to the Panthers all around the country. We're going to specifically be talking about what the pigs are doing to the Black Panther Party right here in Chicago, Illinois. And also, we're going to have to talk about what are we going to have to do about the repression that they're putting on the Black Panther Party in order to get that repression off of the Black Panther Party. And we're not really worried about getting off of it. Let's try to deal with it. Because you can jail a revolutionary, but you can't jail a revolution. You can run a freedom fighter all around the country, but you can't run freedom fighting around the country. You can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation.
That was Fred Hampton. He was murdered in his apartment by a tactical unit of the Cook County, Illinois State Attorney's Office, in conjunction with the Chicago Police Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation in 1969. Next, we'll hear the words of Chilean singer, songwriter, poet, political activist, Victor Jara. He was arrested, tortured, and ultimately shot to death shortly after the U.S.-backed September 11th, 1973 Chilean coup against the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende.
There are 5,000 of us here in this little part of the city. We are 5,000. I wonder how many we are in all the cities and in the whole country. Here alone are 10,000 hands which plant seeds and make the factories run. How much humanity exposed to hunger, cold, panic, pain, moral pressures, terror, and insanity. 6 of us were lost as if into starry space. 1 dead, another beaten as I could never have believed a human being could be beaten. The other 4 wanted to end their terror, one jumping into nothingness, another beating his head against a wall, but all with a fixed look of death. What horror the face of fascism creates. They carry out their plans with knife-like precision. Nothing matters to them. For them, blood equals medals. Slaughter is an act of heroism. Oh God, is this the world that you created? For this your 7 days of wonder and work? Within these 4 walls, only a number exists which does not progress, which slowly will wish more and more for death. But suddenly my conscience awakes, and I see this tied with no heartbeat, only the pulse of machines, and the military showing their midwives' faces full of sweetness. Let Mexico, Cuba, and the world cry out against this ignominy. We are 10,000 hands less which produce nothing. How many of us in the whole country? The blood of our compañero presidente will strike with more strength than bombs and machine guns. So will our fist strike again. how hard it is to sing when I must sing of horror. Horror which I am living, horror which I am dying. To see myself among so much and so many moments of infinity in which silence and screams are the end of my song. What I see, I have never seen. What I have felt and what I feel will give birth to the moment. Victor left it unfinished.
Frederick Douglass.
If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate and put down agitations are men and women who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without the thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one. But it must be a struggle, because power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will.
So, of course, we're on the web, freedomarchives.org, and that's archives with an S on the end. So that's the best way to see what's in our collection. That's updated pretty frequently. You can search, like we said earlier, our database. You can also give us a call here if you see something that you're interested in, you want to talk to us about maybe visiting or talk to us about what we have. The number is 415-863-9977. And we're here Monday through Friday. You're bound to reach one of us if you call during the daytime hours.
Email
info@freedomarchives.org and you'll get one of us. So I think those are the best ways.
Circle A Radio would like to thank Claude Marks and Patricia Hemphill of the Freedom Archives and Ahana Veerkamp, who conducted this interview. Again, the Freedom Archives can be found online at www.freedomarchives.org. Circle A Radio airs every first and third Wednesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. We're interested in your input, so feel free to contact us online at circlearadio@gmail.com.